Keith Knight's joining us. He's the executive editor of the Libertarian Institute, and the battle is joined. Keith, welcome, brother.
Jang, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. We're trying to unite all the different factions here, and you and I were in a debate against each other recently on immigration, right? But here we are uniting, and I love it. Tell me why you were interested in this project, and then we'll get into the specifics in a minute.
Just for the record, the debate was about foreign aid. It was with Mike Benz.
So oh, my bad. You're totally right.
Immigration one yet.
Yeah, no, no, you're totally right, Keith. My bad. You're right. And I said that wrong earlier in the show, too. Well, go ahead.
So the reason we at the Libertarian Institute want to get in on this heroic fight that you guys are thankfully leading for us is because so much of the corruption is usually categorized as, well, what is Nancy Pelosi's portfolio look like? Was Jeffrey Epstein more than just friends with Ehud Barak? Those are very interesting and the implications are certainly significant. But what we talk about at the Libertarian Institute is the blatant corruption that is right in your face. If we take just the three primary catastrophes of my generation, if we look at the war on terror, the financial crisis, and the state response to COVID, I think there was blatant corruption in all of these cases. In the war on terror, President Bush came out on September 20th of 2001 and said, Americans are asking why they hate us. They hate what they see in this chamber right here, a democratically elected government. They hate our freedom of speech, our freedom to vote, and our freedom to disagree. So immediately, the central focus of the war on terror was completely deviated from the truth, which is they hate us for occupying the land of the two sanctuaries, Mecca and Medina. They hate us for supporting Israel, going back to the Qana massacre of 1996. They hate us for the sanctions against Iraq all throughout the 90s, before the second Iraq war and the operation to remove Saddam Hussein. So that is a case of such blatant corruption. Now, George Bush just says this on national television in front of Congress, and we don't even have the standards that we would have for like a fourth or a fifth grader. Hey, you can't just give us an answer. You have to cite your source. You have to show your work. Where was he coming up with this? Completely fabricated. So the 20-year war on terror was verifiably based on a lie perpetuated by Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, but especially the sitting president. And then you can see how fake the Al-Qaeda threat is in general. I was just in New York City in September. And who was there but a former member of Al-Qaeda, a guy whose name used to be al-Muhammad al-Jilani, but he's changed his name to Ahmed al-Shara. And he's now the leader of Syria. He was interviewed by former CIA Director General David Petraeus. And Petraeus said, you know, you have a lot of fans here and I'm one of them. We want to know how you're doing. Do you have time to think? Are you getting any sleep at night? This guy was a member of the group we were told wanted to kill us and hated us just because we were free. This is a blatant scam right in our face. The two other scams display the blatant corruption right in your face. Yeah. Okay,
hold on. Before we go to the other two scams, I just want to add to what you're saying, okay? So we spent $8 trillion on the so-called war on terror. $8 trillion. That's an unimaginable number. We have a $37 trillion debt right now. Eight of that, an enormous percentage of that, is just for that. Now, did Iraq, for example, attack us on 9/11? No. In fact, Saddam Hussein, as terrible as he was opposed to Al-Qaeda. Imprison or kill Al-Qaeda. And we took him out anyway. You want to know who said he was their number one enemy? Nobody's going to be surprised unless you're a moron who works in mainstream media. Israel said Iraq is our number one enemy. And one of the other neocons was Benjamin Netanyahu. And all of American media told us, oh, Iraq, weapons of mass destruction. The region where the Al-Qaeda terrorists came from. I remember Joe Scarborough saying, and we covered it on the show, they hate us because they hate us. They hate us because they hate us. And they would say absurd things like they hate our freedoms. No, they hate that we were in Mecca and Medina and kicking the living crap out of the Palestinians. Now, that doesn't mean they're right, right? What it means is we're fighting someone else's war and spending $8 trillion to do it, right? We didn't have those enemies. All of a sudden, we have those enemies. So Keith is absolutely right. And by the way, in Iraq, it wasn't just about Israel. The oil companies made a killing. The defense contractors made a killing. The bankers who speculated on it made a killing. Every donor class loved the Iraq war. And 69% of Americans, so 7 out of 10 Americans, when we started the war in Iraq, thought that Saddam Hussein had personally attacked us on 9/11. They didn't know it was Al-Qaeda. They thought Saddam did it. Why? Because mainstream media lied to them in mass and gave them that impression so that you could rile people up to attack and spend all that money. And so, and Keith is right about the leader of Syria. He was part of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, the things that were the worst things in the world. But all of a sudden, when Turkey wanted to take northern Syria and Israel wanted to take western Syria, they teamed up to get rid of Assad, put this former Al-Qaeda guy in charge, and now he's cleaned up. He's all washed up and all the past Al-Qaeda-ness and ISIS-ness has been forgiven as long as he gives away land to Israel and Turkey. Look, I'm from Turkey originally, but I'm an American. We don't serve Turkey, we don't serve Israel. Give our $8 trillion back, let alone the $310 billion that Israel's taken directly from us. All right, now Keith, the other two.
The other two that come to mind would be the financial crisis primarily. This was seen by both Democrats and Republicans as one of two ways. It was not something that could have been foreseen, or well, we were able to foresee it, but we did not want to rile up the masses and give too much information to our Democratic constituents. So either way, there is no innocent explanation. What I believe happened was this was intentionally orchestrated primarily by people looking to the advice of Paul Krugman in his, this is an economist at the New York Times, on August 2nd of 2002, he said, what Alan Greenspan should do is replace the NASDAQ bubble with the housing bubble. He uses that term specifically. So regardless of what you believe the primary cause was of the financial crisis, we have a foreknowledge of people saying it should actually happen, people who are in significant positions of power, or even best case scenario, they don't have the knowledge or incentives to let us know what's happening. And when it happens on their watch, they don't even apologize. After 9/11, Bush gets a 91% approval rating. The economy crashes on Bush's watch, and then we get a troubled asset relief package, another $1 trillion to the bankers. This is blatant corruption right in your face. You don't have to say, well, hypothetically, does this circumstantial evidence match up? This is right in your face. And the final example would be the concept that governments and governors had the right to lock people down during COVID for extended periods of time. The work by Dr. Thomas E. Woods Jr. in his book Diary of a Psychosis shows that states like Florida and California that had very different lockdown measures and very different approaches to mask mandates did not see a significant difference in overall deaths. So the message is clear. It's much better to empower the working class to make their own decisions rather than having oligarchs coercively decide what's best for us, whether it's in foreign policy, finance, or virology.
Okay, so let me tackle those two. So this is interesting. You're coming at it from libertarian perspective. I'm coming at it from progressive perspective. So on the financial collapse in 2008, there's no question why it happened. Collateralized debt obligations, derivatives, and basically all of that is fancy words for gambling. And leverage was the key part of it. So guys, I need you to focus on this. This is super important. Donors paid off Congress people to take away regulations that prohibited them from over gambling with our money. Because remember, they're using depositor money, but they're keeping the proceeds. And so if they do, they take our money and they make a bet twice the size or even four times the size, it's actually not that bad. So I no finance, etc. That sounds bad, but you could live with that. But once you get to 10, 20, you're playing with fire and it's guaranteed to collapse because even the smallest variation in price will cause a collapse. And they didn't stop at 10 or 20, they got into the hundreds. So they take a dollar of yours, gamble with it, and leverage it 100 times, 200 times. That's a guaranteed failure. There's no way that that does not result in a collapse. And our government crook politicians took money from those financial interests, allowed them to rig the system so that they would take that kind of risk, and then it collapses, and then what did they do? Then Obama came in and said he was gonna fix it. He was at 83% approval rating after inauguration. So this country is not racist, etc. Are there people that have issues in the freaking culture wars? Yes, but the culture wars are meant to divide us. 83% supported Obama, hope and change. What did he do? His top donors in 2008 were the bankers, and he bailed out the bankers. And he paid their bonuses. Bonuses for destroying the economy. Here's the left and the right telling you they've been lying to you the whole time. The Democrats and the Republicans. And on COVID, look, we're gonna have disagreements on some of the measures that were taken on COVID. But what's important is who's in charge. And the answer is Big Pharma. If you think Israel gives a lot of money, Big Pharma gives way more, okay? And so that's why you might have had some of the rules during COVID. But most importantly, we're not allowed to negotiate drug prices. That's mental. What do you mean? Keith, what does it mean that in a capitalist free market, you're not allowed to negotiate prices? Has anybody even ever heard of such an insane thing before?
It means that the oligarchs are coercively intervening in a spot where otherwise people would engage in voluntary contracts. Of course, you should be able to negotiate. This is something that unions could be extremely beneficial in, whether it's threatening to strike, threatening to organize, having collective bargaining. Negotiation is the root of a lot of economic growth because you make sure that you're getting value for value exchanges instead of having someone step in and say that negotiation is not allowed. That is just so psychotic. It's one of those things that I think 30 years from now, people will look back and say, how could that have ever been justified to the masses as anything other than a scam? Only thing that I respectfully disagree on, the financial crisis with. I don't think the deregulation of Glass-Steagall caused the financial crisis because the most volatile banks were Lehman Brothers, that was just an investment firm, Bear Stearns, that was just an investment firm, and AIG, which was just an insurance company. I think the more diversified banks with both commercial and real estate investments and investments in companies, and they had savings and capital, they were much more diversified and less volatile than those banks. Banks like Lehman, Bear Stearns, and AIG. But absolutely, tomorrow they should be able to negotiate drug prices. That is completely crooked.
Yeah, and guys, it's totally okay to have these disagreements about, hey, what exactly went wrong, etc. The big picture is who's in charge, and the donors are in charge. We're not in charge, and that's why we're trying to band together, even with the disagreements, to get to a place where we can take our government back. So we can have actual discussions, debates, and get to the right policy. So along those lines, Keith, we've been pushing HR 3493. That's Donald Trump's executive order turned verbatim into a bill that says we get basically most favored nation status on drugs. So the combination of France, Germany, etc., whatever they're paying, we should pay the same because the drug companies are just adding on top for prices that they make profits on already. And they're just robbing us blind, and our government is allowing them to do it. So what's your take on whether you can get behind that?
I am not sure about the specifics of this bill. Anything you want to send me, I am more than happy to look at. When I think of wanting low prices for products and services, I think that is a good thing. Now, that sounds like a boring and predictable opinion to have. Realize this is not the opinion of President Trump in general or Steve Bannon, who says prices are too low on products A, B, C, and D, and these products are coming from China. Low prices are just very bad. Herbert Hoover famously opposed low prices when there was the stock market crash. He instituted the Smoot-Hawley tariffs. Franklin Roosevelt even was very skeptical of the freedom to lower prices during a recession. Therefore, he instituted the National Recovery Administration, the NRA, in his day. So it's good. It is significant that we come to an agreement that low prices are a good thing. I think low prices in almost anything can come from two sources. One, a drastic increase in the supply. This is how Cornelius Vanderbilt lowered the cost of steamships, how Steve Jobs lowered the cost of Apple products, the reason why books and DVDs and printers and computers are so much cheaper than they previously were, because the supply has radically increased. The other way to do it is by state mandate. absent any sort of negotiation or increase in capital investment, which leads to higher methods of production, mass production, and a higher supply. I would not support the state regulating prices unilaterally, but any step that can be taken to increase the supply of health access to healthcare, goods and service, I think we should unilaterally issue free trade in all pharmaceuticals with any country. We should decriminalize that economic activity between consenting adults. I think the higher the supply, the lower the price would be. It's not just fantasy land. We see it all the time with Walmart and Amazon. Very greedy companies, but they can't afford to be so greedy as to have such high prices because they have an incentive to produce to the masses of consumers. If you ask someone, well, it's okay if we legalize pornography and drugs and guns because they'll be privately held. So only the 1% would be able to afford those private products. But if you think about it, you realize that the incentive of any producer is to get access to a mass market. So I support lower costs in healthcare, just like you. I think we need to embrace free trade and abolish certificate of need laws, which require a hospital to get a license before getting permission to build. This drastically lowers the amount of hospitals that are available. Lower supply leads to higher prices than there otherwise would be. So I support anything in the realm of voluntarism and free trade to get those prices lower. Would you support anything like that in the meantime?
Yeah, I would. So here's the thing. Like, so there again, there's going to be a little bit of variance in some of the proposed solutions. But to back up what Keith is saying, and how again mainstream media kind of lies to you and covers things up. So Bernie at one point went to go get drugs from Canada and bring them into Michigan, right? And it was done as a show of like, wait, why if you just go like 5 minutes that way, you can get the drugs for like a quarter of the price. Why don't we just bring them here? This is literally the same exact drugs. And mainstream media and the politicians, including Democrats, were like, those are unsafe Canadian drugs. They haven't been properly regulated. What are you talking about? It's literally the same exact drug. Why do we have to pay four times as much? And they're like, no, the donors say, I mean, it's free. It's not free market. It's the opposite of a free market. Let us buy the Canadian drugs. Boom, there's a free market. So, okay, last thing, which is on Israel. Look, we're trying to get attention to folks. We're paying for a genocide here. It's crazy, nuts, right? So they say, no, even though America has given Israel $310 billion so far, let alone the $8 trillion on the global war on terror, etc. We owe Israel. So, and it's anti-Semitic to say that you don't owe Israel money. So what do you think? Do we owe Israel, and do we all have to just work an extra shift for Israel because they haven't finished the genocide yet?
For all the confidence these people have previously had in calling other people snowflakes and calling them ultra woke, the Douglas Murrays and Ben Shapiros are the wokest snowflakes imaginable. They're taking a very plausible explanation. We see the destruction of Gaza. Jared Kushner the other day in his 60 Minutes interview said it had looked like there was a nuclear explosion in Gaza when we had been in Israel for the negotiations in Qatar. So maybe it's the fact that they see mass devastation of the poorest, most vulnerable people. Maybe that could actually rile them up. But no. Douglas Murray and Dennis Prager and Ben Shapiro and Sean Hannity and Mark Levin have all looked into it, and they know that really we just we love Henry Ford. We're just anti-Semites. Just the most nefarious explanations possible. Of course, there's a much more plausible explanation. There's an organization called the Jewish Chronicle, which right after October 7th authorized the continued publication of a document titled Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. This was published by the Hamas media office. So let's look at what Hamas said when they had more eyeballs on them than ever before. What is in that document that they translated into English so the English speaking world can see it? You would think, according to the Mark Levins and Ben Shapiros, this would be about how the Jews are disproportionately involved in the banks, and they're nefarious, and they're the synagogue of you know what. But actually, it was all secular justifications, which they say that the British and Zionist regime have occupied Palestine going back to 1948. They even mention the terrorist actions by the Ergon, Stern, and Haganah with people like Menachem Begin before 1948 took place. The Hamas media office document also mentions the previous mowings of the lawn, which are referred to as Operation Cast Lead, Operation Pillar of Defense. Now, since 2005, Israel had been blockading Gaza. Realize the US government has a policy that if China threatens to blockade Taiwan, that's an act of war that we will respond to militarily. But Israel gets a 20-year blockade on the people of Gaza. And it's like, well, we can't expect them to ever do anything. It is just, this would be another concept of either blatant corruption or actively misleading the jury. This is why in court they say, do you promise to tell the whole truth? Because you can obviously omit things by telling just specific examples of things that are technically true. So yes, this blind support for Israel, I think, is absolutely detrimental. And it hurts how other people see us. I mean, I look at Nixon, I don't like Nixon, but I see him shaking hands with Chairman Mao. I see Dwight Eisenhower shaking hands with Nikita Khrushchev. And I think this is a great thing. So we should be much more about negotiating. Look at how proud Trump was to have negotiated the ceasefire that lasted, what, like 48 hours or so. So the point is, when you engage in diplomacy, it's very good public relations for your country. If you represent us, that's what you should be doing. Consider if you just care about Israel, you're the most hardcore Zionist of all time. It's not even clear that you would support what's currently happening in Israel, considering as a causal result of this footage getting out of Gaza, the support for Israel is lower than it ever has been at any point in my life. I am 29 years old. Cenk, is that how you're seeing it, that support for Israel, that even if I'm a total Zionist, I should still oppose this because Israel's PR is worse than it's ever been in my lifetime? Is that true for you?
Oh, 100%. I think they're nuts. To get out of the room, are you? If I was a huge fan of Israel and I had any kind of influence, I would go and tell them, guys, leave the building immediately. Like, leave Gaza, leave the West Bank, and even leave America. Like, stop with the constant, no, you owe us, give us more money, we're gonna kill more Palestinians, we're gonna take more land. You're getting the whole world to absolutely hate you. And by extension, unfortunately, hate Jewish people. Stop, you're hurting Jewish people, you're hurting your own country. Why do you want the whole world to hate you? Oh, they already hate us, everyone's an anti-Semite, everyone is a terrible person. Who are bigots, except us, we're holy and moral and special, right? Now, what, it's like they're in a trance. Like, they think that there's no consequences, and because they're not doing this because they're Jewish, they're doing it despite the fact that they're Jewish. Of all people, they should know to not go in this direction. And I think that Jewish tradition and culture says you shouldn't, obviously says you shouldn't go in this direction, but they've gotten blinded by this nationalism. But most importantly, for our purposes, Israel can do whatever they want. They're a grown-up country. They have nuclear weapons, etc. But why do you keep asking us or demanding of us our money, our support, our military, our troops for everything that you're doing? It has nothing to do with us. And so this insistence that America must pay Israel, America owes Israel, America must never criticize Israel, America must bow its head. I mean, they killed 11 Americans in the last 3 years in the West Bank, and our government hasn't done anything. There's an American kid who's right now in an Israeli prison. They won't answer for it, and our government doesn't even ask for it. And there was an American who was attacked, we covered on the show today, in the West Bank by settlers. The embassy, the American embassy writes back to him, we're not permitted to help you because you're inside Israel. What is this? I mean, what part of this is like pro-America? It doesn't make any sense.
just unequivocal, literally psychopathic. When you look at the criteria for psychopathy, it's displaying a complete disregard or negligence for common sense empathy. The definition is something like that. So this is quite literally what we're up against when you see the tweets from Ben-Gavir or Smotrich, or how about Congressman Randy Fine saying glass, obviously knowing what that means. Before even the ceasefire, he had said that, well, look, in the Second World War, we faced a real external enemy and we ended that with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we should consider doing the same thing here. I'm sorry, I don't have this quote off the top of my head.
No, no, he advocated for nuking them and starving them to death. He's a monster.
Oh, yeah, this is another example of the blatant evil that is right in our face, because it is tempting to wonder, was the CIA behind this or that? And, you know, did Oswald really act alone? And I love those discussions and they're productive. But first and foremost, if we care about corruption, we have to get a basic understanding of the blatant corruption right in front of us. Here's my prediction for future corruption that is coming along. It is commonly said that war stimulates the economy. You get people spending money, and this sort of has a multiplier effect throughout the economy, which allows it to grow and increases the circulation of dollars. Instead of saying war is a euphemism for mass murder, as we're seeing in Gaza, as we've seen in Ukraine, as we saw in Libya, as we saw in Syria, as we saw in Iraq, Afghanistan, and the First and Second World War, not to mention the wars in Vietnam and Korea, they're going to try and sell us, I predict. This is according to Niall Ferguson, Henry Kissinger's head biographer. Right after he passed away, Ferguson went on the Charlie Rose show. It is very likely that the US government is going to try to provoke a war with China over Taiwan. Now, we saw that we had to protect the Donbass from being, you know, acquired by the Russian Federation. It looks like this is the same ploy that will be taken in the case of Taiwan. These proxy wars are very beneficial. The US government sees the Chinese as a potential competitor in the world, and they're going to try and stop it. So what the Young Turks audience and the Libertarian Institute audience, I think, need to be so firm on is that in war, it is a euphemism for mass working class death, starvation, dismemberment, and enslavement under the guise of conscription, as both Vladimir Zelensky and Vladimir Putin and Benjamin Netanyahu have engaged in. Forced labor, even if you don't think the war is worth fighting. So if you support the working class, if you support people in vulnerable positions, you can't just have a standard for people in this geographical area called America, or people in your age group, or people in your racial demographic, or people on your ideological side. It's important that we hate what's happening in Gaza and extract a productive lesson from this, that in war, it's mass murder of the most vulnerable, innocent people, far worse than any other exploitation that I can imagine. So that is the message that I wanted to bring to your audience. And I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, I love that phrase that you just put, that war is a euphemism for mass murder. And if there's anything that progressives and libertarians agree on, it's being anti-war. Because war is just feeding us into the war machine like we're fodder for them. What's the point? Why do I want to die for you to make more money? It's sick. I've got no interest in it. So no, we got to protect Americans from all these wars that the corrupt elites want to start. So I love that. People check out the Libertarian Institute, where Keith is the managing editor. And then hopefully when we have these specific campaigns, we can coordinate together, work together. You bring in libertarians, we bring in progressives and everyone else who's watching this. And let's make sure we protect Americans first, okay?
Appreciate it, Cenk. Thanks for having me, brother.
Thank you, Keith. Appreciate it.